Well, this morning then, our theme is going to be trusting in God. And you'll be pleased to know there's not one long sermon, but there are four short talks and examples of situations in which we may need to trust in God. And the four short examples are really sort of more testimony than sermon this morning. And hopefully we've got a picture and a title to go to with each one of them. So first of all, trusting God in everyday life. And before I forget, I've chosen that particular picture because that is an MAF plane, Mission Aviation Fellowship plane, that was working in the Solomons. And our communion offering this morning is for MAF. And I think yes, we can't. That's actually the plane parked outside the church office for refueling, as you wouldn't expect to find it. It's a float plane. They had landed on the water, took off from the water rather, landed on the airstrip, went down the airstrip, turned off, went down the road to the church office and stopped there to refuel. One of the things that I learnt in the Solomons was to trust God in what had, up until then, been the ordinary things of life, such as transport. Before I went, I'd taken transport from A to B very much for granted. It was a normal thing that happened every day. But suddenly, when faced with canoes, small boats on rough sea and planes, well, that did all change. And it would probably be true to say that I prayed more about transport than almost any other thing in the 18 years that I was there. On one very memorable trip, three of us teachers travelled around the Western Solomons in the education canoe. It was a large wooden dugout canoe with an outboard motor, and it was driven by the school canoe driver. We went to give tests to primary school children, which were like the 11 plus tests that we used to have for selection for secondary school. One day we set out from the island of Vella La Vella, which was just north of Goldie College, early in the morning, and we had 2 or 3 hours travel to go across to another island called Renonga. The first part of the journey was okay, and then it got rougher and rougher. And the canoe, instead of going, it was going face into the waves, instead of going up the wave and down the other side, on 2 occasions went up the wave, failed to get to the top, and went through the wave instead, and the wave broke over us. The driver had to stop the canoe and check that everybody and everything was still in there, and we had to bail out before we could carry on. A canoe trip that goes through waves, I discovered, is not to be recommended. When we arrived, we gave the children their tests, and then we had lunch, and then we set out again. And this time, it was with an extra passenger. The primary school had a girl who needed to get home to her own village, who was on the south of the island. But that afternoon, the sea became really very rough indeed. We crashed over big waves that were crashing into the cliffs beside us, and then coming back to hit us yet again. And what was very ominous about it was the fact that we did not see another single boat or canoe out in that weather that afternoon. The other thing that was very frightening about it was the fact that what we did see were a number of water spouts, like mini tornadoes which pick up the water, and they were just travelling across the water. Now, you've no idea where they're going to go or where they're not going to go. You can't deliberately avoid water spouts, and I hate to think what the result would have been if one of them had hit us. When we reached the south of the island, in order to get to the girls' village that we were going to, we would have had to turn around the south of the island and go along, which would have been parallel to the direction of the waves, not going into them. The canoe driver took one look and said, "We can't do that. It's too rough. If we try and do that, the wave will just turn the canoe over straight away." So the girl had to come all the way on with us to the next island, which we were going to Simbo, and stay the night. And the canoe driver said, "Well, I'll take you back tomorrow if I can, if the weather's better." Well, we finally, very thankfully, arrived safely at Simbo Island. Everything in the canoe was completely, totally soaked, including us, of course. And in addition to the soaking, I think this was the only time I really got bruised from head to foot in a canoe journey, because as the canoe went up the side of a wave, it went smashed down the other side and up the next one and smashed down the other side. And you try that for an hour or two, and it's very painful experience. Well, it was noteworthy that after experiences like that, the education department, in their infinite wisdom, decided to issue all testers with plastic bags and boxes, which were supposed to be waterproof, in which to put the test papers. We pointed out that test papers would not necessarily get safely transported from A to B like that. After travelling around like that in the education canoe for a couple of weeks, the canoe was returned to the church office. And for the next half of the trip, it was government transport we were provided with. We felt we'd done pretty well to survive that trip and finally safely return. And since the weather was so bad, and everybody could see that the weather was so bad, we thought the church office staff or the other staff at school just might have been concerned about our safety. Well, the only comment that we got from them when the canoe was returned was a complaint that we had got seawater in the engine. I'll leave you to imagine what we thought and said about that afterwards. Personally, I took great comfort on that journey from the fact that Jesus knew all about small boats in rough seas. And I felt sure that he would understand our fears and be sympathetic. Psalm 46, which is one of my favourites, reminds us that God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we need not be afraid, even if the seas roar and rage. And it's words like that that spring to mind on rough canoe journeys and help us to trust God in matters of transport. Now, we're going to have our Bible reading, which Margaret's going to come and read for us, a reading that tells us a story about Abraham and how he put his trust in God and the result of his trust in God.
The reading this morning comes from the Old Testament, from the first book in the Old Testament, from Genesis. Starting with in chapter 12, verse 1, on page 12 in the church Bibles. The Lord said to Abram, "Leave your country, your relatives, and your father's home, and go to a land that I'm going to show you. I will give you many descendants, and they will become a great nation. I will bless you and make your name famous, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, but I will curse those who curse you. And through you, I will bless all the nations." When Abram was 75 years old, he started out from Haran, as the Lord had told him to do, and Lot went with him. Abram took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the wealth and all the slaves they had acquired in Haran, and they started out for the land of Canaan. After Lot had left, the Lord said to Abram, "From where you are, look carefully in all directions. I am going to give you and your descendants all the land that you can see, and it will be yours forever. I am going to give you so many descendants that no one will be able to count them all. It would be as easy to count all the specks of dust on earth." After this, Abram had a vision and heard the Lord say to him, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I will shield you from danger and give you a great reward." But Abram answered, "Sovereign Lord, what good will your reward do me, since I have no children? My only heir is Eliezer of Damascus. You have given me no children, and one of my slaves will inherit my property." Then he heard the Lord speaking to him again, "This slave, Eliezer, will not inherit your property. Your own son will be your heir." The Lord took him outside and said, "Look at the sky and try to count the stars. You will have as many descendants as that." Abram put his trust in the Lord, and because of this, the Lord was pleased with him and accepted him. Thanks be to God.
So we can trust in God in our everyday lives, whether our journey is by London Underground or canoe. And the more we do trust God from day to day, the more we are able to continue to trust him in life's emergencies. God has promised to help those who trust in him. And Psalm 18 is just one of the many psalms that reminds us in verse 2, "My God is my protection, and with him I am safe." One of the occasions on which I felt that I'd been particularly kept safe was during a bad earthquake which happened one weekend. The only way I could really have a break during school terms at Goldie College was if I went away for a weekend. And occasionally I was able to do that. On one occasion, I'd gone across to Munda, where the church hospital is. It's about half an hour away by canoe, and I was staying with a Canadian nurse there. The picture you can see is actually the main consulting room in the hospital, and the doctor there, John Kerry, was one of the doctors. But this happened to be a different doctor who was there at the time when I was staying there this time. We were having an evening meal with the doctor and his wife, and there was a visiting doctor from England who was staying with them and also having the evening meal. And we were simply sitting round the table eating. And suddenly everything started to shake violently. Well, the usual thing to do in an earthquake is to run outside away from buildings, in case of collapse, of course. But in this case, the earthquake started so suddenly and so strongly that we thought that if we tried to run outside, we'd only fall over trying to do it. So we continued to sit round the table and hope for the best. Because the table was in front of us, I was holding on to the table, but of course the table was no steadier than anything else. That was shaking too. The visiting doctor, who was sitting next to me, suddenly grabbed me and was holding on to me. I was shaking too, so he was no better off. Everything shaked and shook and creaked. The lights above our head dimmed and came back again, dimmed and came back again. And eventually, after what seemed a long time, the movement stopped and the lights went out completely because the wiring had been damaged. The doctor, who was still hanging on to me, suddenly realised what he was doing and said to everybody, "Look what I'm doing, look what I'm doing, I'm holding her, I'm holding her." I think he just couldn't believe what he'd done, he'd instinctively done it. I thought at first he was being protective, but he wasn't. He was hanging on for dear life himself. Unusually that night, there were no aftershocks or further tremors, so we had a good night's sleep. And the next day, when I went back to Goldie College, the first thing I noticed as we approached in the canoe was that the main wharf had completely collapsed. There was a pile of bits of wood where it had been, and in fact, it was about a year before that was ever properly rebuilt. When I got back to our house, I discovered what had happened there. In my bedroom, there was a big set of heavy wooden bookshelves from floor to ceiling, which had been loaded with books and things, and which had been freestanding. During the earthquake, that whole set had completely collapsed right across my bed. In addition, there was another large set of bookshelves just outside my bedroom door. And that had fallen straight across the bedroom door, blocking what would have been my exit if I was in the bedroom. By the time I got back, other teachers and some of the girls had managed to put things back in the house. And of course, it took me some weeks to find anything. But everyone agreed that it was a great blessing that I hadn't been there that night. If I had been in bed or even in my bedroom at the time of the earthquake, I think it could definitely have been a nasty case of squashed me. The first thing I did was to move the shelves when I got back so that that couldn't possibly happen again. The earthquakes remind us that we're not nearly so much in control of what happens around us as we might think we are. Sometimes with all our modern technology, it may seem that we have little need of God. We can manage by ourselves. But when the very ground that you're standing on isn't steady and still and reliable, and there's nothing that you can do except trust God and trust that God is in control, then you start to think differently about things. Psalm 46 not only talks about rough seas, but it actually mentions earthquakes as well. We need not be afraid even if the earth is shaken. And again, it's words like that that spring to mind when there's an earthquake and can help us to trust God in the scary situations of life. We can also trust God to help us to care for others when sometimes we can't do that. The picture this time is evening prayers in the dormitory one night. And if you just look at the picture for a moment, you'll see sitting next to me, the tallest girl in the room, whose name is Rita. And our next thought involves Rita. At school, we usually had about 300 students, all boarders, of course, and they needed supervision and care all day and all night. When all of us were in lessons in the morning, supervision was relatively easy, but that left the rest of the day and the night, of course. My job, looking after the girls, was not made any easier by the fact that there were normally about 100 girls in two dormitories next to our house and about 200 boys in dormitories on the other side of the football field. All normal, healthy teenagers whose minds were not always on their studies, needless to say. Most of the time they were fairly well behaved, but naturally sometimes things went wrong. One night, that girl called Rita invited her boyfriend to spend the night with her. He climbed up on top of some water tanks at the back of the girl's dormitory, climbed into the dormitory, and climbed into bed with Rita. When they were found out, as inevitably they would have been, Rita realized she was in very serious trouble. The punishment for that was immediate expulsion for the boy and the girl concerned. The headmaster told her that she would be sent home the next day. At home, she was going to have to face a very angry father, and she also had several tough older brothers. And she realized just how cross they were going to be. So that evening, she said that rather than go home and face the family, she was going to commit suicide. My first thought was that she should be taken home at once, even if that would mean a canoe journey in the dark, so that we wouldn't have to try and be responsible for her all night. I felt that there was no way I could possibly guard her all night. And this incident happened shortly after two or three other girls of similar age, including one of our Form 2 students, had committed suicide in similar circumstances. So it was a serious possibility. Despite this, the headmaster decided that she should wait until the morning. Well, much as it seemed advisable, I decided I couldn't possibly sit up all night and watch her. And anyway, if she was determined to do something, I couldn't physically prevent her. She, as you see from the picture, was at least as big as me and definitely considerably stronger. So I did the only thing that I thought I could. I asked the older girls in the dormitory to keep an eye on her as much as possible, and I prayed that God would take care of her that night and trusted her to him. The next morning, I was very much relieved to see her still fully alive and sent home. As far as I know, she went on to have a good career in the police as a policewoman, as did a number of our expelled students. I took great care never to get into trouble with the police. There are times in life when we have to trust God to take care of others because we just can't be there with them all the time. All of us have people we love and want to care for. We've got relatives or good friends or people we think are in special need and need our care. But we can't be there with them, looking after them all the time, however much we might want to. But God can. God is faithful, and his love and care are for everyone. Sometimes God works through people like us. Sometimes God can be trusted to work in ways that we never might have thought of, even. But he can be trusted to take care in situations where we can't do a lot more. And finally, we can trust God to help us do the tasks that he calls us to do. That's going out to take services in the school canoe. God calls and needs each of us who are his followers to be his witnesses. But trying to share the good news of what Jesus has done for us is not an easy job. I'm sure that many of us find that difficult to do, sharing good news with other people. It's not that we don't want to share our Christian faith. It's how to do it. Sometimes it's that we can't find the right words. But other times it can be that God can work through us if we're available to him. He can work through us and show to others himself through us and our actions. A number of people in the Solomons, despite the fact that by the time I was there, they were perhaps third generation Christians even, still had a strong belief in spirits. And there was a small island out in the lagoon near the edge of the reef that had been used as a burial place. It was called Skull Island because in the old days the skulls of important people and respected relatives were carefully preserved there. And there are many skulls on the island still. Local people believed that that was a dangerous place to visit and that anybody who went there, certainly if you touched or interfered with the skulls in any way, but anybody who went there was likely to at least get sick afterwards. One Saturday afternoon, two of us staff decided to go for a paddle in my canoe and visit the island on the edge of the lagoon. The girls all knew where we'd gone, and I think they were waiting with great interest to find out what would happen to us. I prayed particularly that we would not even get so much as a cold afterwards or for the next few weeks. And when they saw us come back perfectly well after a pleasant canoe trip and stay well, I think they had food for thought. We, in turn, continued to maintain that God's spirit is infinitely more powerful than any evil spirit and can and does protect those who trust in him. On that occasion, it was not that God had given us the words with which to witness, but it was that God had been able to use us to show others by example and by what had happened, an important Christian truth which they needed to learn. So we've got mentioned this morning four different ways in which we can trust in God. I think we've got, yes, the list there. We've talked about trusting God in everyday life, trusting God in difficult and dangerous times, trusting God to care for others, and trusting God to enable us to do the tasks he calls us to do. What are the results of trusting in God? Well, in our Bible reading and from our own experience, we know that to trust in God God promises us his presence with us always, to keep us safe and be our refuge and strength in times of trouble. He promises that we need not be afraid. He promises that he will provide for our needs. He promises that the Holy Spirit will strengthen us and use us to share the gospel. And we could go on with a longer list, I'm sure, but the final one I want to mention is that God will be pleased with us and accept us just as he did Abraham if we are concerned to trust in him. We can trust in God because we know that whatever happens, God is in control, and God is faithful to those who are faithful to him. We can trust knowing that God is in control. We can trust without being fearful, because the eternal God is our refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms of God.